What if everything you thought you knew was just the beginning? What if reality isn't what it seems and consciousness stretches far beyond the limits of our understanding? Join us as we journey into the unknown, seeking truth, wisdom, and connection beyond the veil. Welcome to Beyond Transcendence, where the mysteries of the universe unfold, one conversation at a time. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Beyond Transcendence. I'm your host, Josh Rutledge, and joined, as always, by the co-host, Debs Shakti. How are you doing today, Debs?
I'm fabulous. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, yeah. When this comes out, it'll be February 28th. But yeah. I hope everybody who's listening, who, if you celebrate Valentine's Day, you had a good one.
Yeah. So. More than anything, I just like having a reminder that we should be concentrating on love. So
I think that, you know, for me, it's hard because I recently learned the origins of Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And although it doesn't have like the greatest origins, you know, as far as how it got started, I think that, mm-hmm. you know, like a lot of these things, a lot of these holidays, we have the opportunity to kind of make it what we really feel like it should be. Exactly. And so as long as it's based in, you know, mutual respect and love, I think it's okay.
It's kind of funny that you say that, because that kind of goes along with what we wanted to talk about today, you know, how we define things with our practices and rituals, and how they can conform or change and morph depending on what our plans are.
But before we get into the topic of today, so a little bit of a teaser there for anybody who's, you know, watching, listening. I want to introduce a new segment. And we talked about this a little bit off air, but I think it's important for people to know that we are all going through various phases of our journey. Mm-hmm. And along those phases, I think the universe gives you what we call guideposts, right? To let you know that you're still on the right trail. And so in this new segment, I'd like to call it Guideposts. And we would just kind of talk about the things that have been happening for us, to us, in our own journeys. And maybe somebody listening, maybe you are having something in a similar experience. And if so, love to hear about it. So,
awesome.
All right. So, if you're okay, I'll go first.
Yeah.
All right. So I recently traveled for my day job to Richmond, Virginia. And prior to going, I was really anxious about flying. And I reached out and I shared that with you. And I felt like it was something that I really was supposed to work through. And you gave me some insight into a potential cause for it. And so in a meditation, I really focused on and meditated on that, and ended up having almost working through it from another lifetime, where I had crashed my craft. I was an ET. My family were safe, but I was gravely injured and ended up dying in their arms. And because of that, I felt, you know, obviously it was a death involved in flying. So that was maybe an introduction for a lot of my anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then I was, you know, also feeling like I left them before they, you know, in a situation where they may not have, you know, been able to survive or even, you know, grow.
Right. You had a lot of guilt around that.
Yeah.
Departure, I remember. So,
and so, you know, it was really amazing, because about 2 years ago or so, I found that I have a gift, and I think other people likely have the same gift, but I think it's maybe called a Kundalini energy expression. And so basically I feel, starting at my feet, it comes all the way up through my body and then exits to the top of my head in this big burst of energy. And I found that when working with spirits who may be stuck in between existences because they weren't ready to go or it was sudden. I can use this burst of energy to help them move on to the next plane of existence.
Right.
And so when I did this meditation and I found this other version of myself, and this other version of myself was stuck in this other, you know, the in-between, I did the same thing
Nate.
in my meditation and actually released this other version of myself from this void that they
limbo,
were
existing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And immediately felt better afterwards. And just, all my fear and anxiety of flying was gone. And it was just amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, later when I was in Virginia, I connected with a spirit that was in my hotel room that, interacted with me by, turning some things over and turning on my TV in the middle of the night. And I was able to help them move on. And then one evening, I actually was visited by an ET who at the time I was having some pretty disturbing dreams, and I thought they were the cause of it, but later I realized that they were not, and so I felt bad that I dismissed them so angrily even. And so, but yeah, it's a really amazing the sequence of events that happen when you have, we kind of spoke about it a little bit in previous episodes, when you get to the point where you're raising your vibrational level and you're letting go of those weights that are just holding you down and holding you back, you can really experience more in life. So right. That's my guidepost, if you will, of the episode.
And I love it so much because it really illustrates what, I always talk when I talk about the physical body is our spacesuit, right? We are spiritual cosmonauts, if you will. And we put on this spacesuit so we can navigate this particular environment, the third dimensional environment, the way a human should, with your senses, with your sensory organs and so forth. But that visor on that spacesuit is limited in its scope of perceptive abilities. I mean, if you think about our astronauts, it's really hard for them. They're pretty hardwired to that spacesuit. So if they want to look over here, they literally have to do this. They can turn a little bit, but not much. So when you start to, and this has been my perception, my experience so far, when we start to do practices or focus our minds on and our hearts on raising our vibrational state, you could insert the word emotional state there or feeling state. When we do that and we're consistent with it, we literally open up or widen the scope of perception of that visor. But it's not just through our eyes, it's through all of our physical senses. And then of course, all of our, what people call extra senses, which are not, they're just the ones that we haven't really paid attention to for millennia. But so people can get a little freaked out when they start doing these practices. They're like, okay, you just described a Kundalini energy surge, which is very common in people who do these spiritual practices. It can be very shocking the first time it happens. It can even make you feel like your wiring's fritzed out for a while or whatever. And if you don't have the proper guidance or contextual foundation of wisdom that goes along with that before it happens, it's just like takes you by surprise and fear can come in. But I'm like you. I get certain sensory expressions, just like what you're describing, when I'm doing energy work with people. When I get a hit on, this is where the problem is, now widen your scope of perception and find out what it is. I especially get it when I am doing like CE5 or doing contact work, especially with groups, and someone sees something in the sky, let's just say, and everybody's getting excited. We look on the apps. There's nothing on the apps that show that it's man-made. There's still stuff up there that aren't on the apps, so we still can't be sure. But if I get that Kundalini spiral of energy going up my spine and coming out the top of my head, it's you know, it's our family. It's our other versions of ourselves. It's what people yep. might call star people. If it doesn't happen, then I usually say, you know, we don't know.
Yeah.
But so there's that. And then there's just this thing about if you don't have someone who is more experienced, that's why there's more than one of us here on this mm-hmm. planet, in this realm. If you don't have someone that's more experienced with some of this stuff and you encounter it by chance, if you will, it can be kind of unnerving or scary. It can be very thrilling, but then you don't know what to do with it. Or suddenly you have new gifts, like you discovered yours, and you're like, okay, now how do I learn to control it? You don't have a user's manual. So that's why we have developed teachers, gurus, mm-hmm. Priests, shaman, all of these authority type figures to help us. They started out as, big brothers, big sisters, kind of, hey, that happened to me. Let me tell you how I figured something out, and passing that along. For millennia, it was through oral tradition and then through written tradition. And now we're just like instantly sharing mm-hmm. everything with everybody. So it's a pretty big conglomerate. However, when we do these things, we have to be very vigilant and disciplined in paying attention to how much power we give to what other people are telling us mm-hmm. and how much power we are giving to what just our physical senses are telling us mm-hmm. because it can cause a lot of backwash. It can also initiate the creation of dogma, for instance, mm-hmm. and usually that's a control mechanism, so
yeah. And I always think about too, I'm totally going to blank on his name. I'm going to turn around and look at the book. Dr. Joe Dispenza, mm-hmm. He says, where you put your attention is where you put your intention. Yeah. And so I think that, sometimes whether or not we're conscious of it or even they're conscious of it, because we've become a society of sensationalism and yes. a really short attention span, mm-hmm. That the people who are willing to be sensational, in their actions or in how they handle themselves all the time, are really looking for people to spend more than their attention span on them. And so where they put their attention is where they put their intention. And so the more of us who tune in, let's say, to the person who is being sensational, the more power they are able to draw from mm-hmm. us in that activity.
Right. It's almost vampiric, and it can have some pretty negative repercussions. Because really, all of this stuff that we're talking about, Josh, all of the, I hate using this cliche phrase, but the ascension process, right? Mm-hmm. All of the things we're doing to improve ourselves, raise our vibrational state, be more perceptive and more proactive in what we do, more conscious in what mm-hmm. we do, more harmonious, the more we do that, the more the people who want attention, who don't do the work, mm-hmm. try to get the attention away from you or try to get your attention on them. And so it can be kind of this tug of war, thing that happens in duality where you're doing all the right stuff and then you get boffed for it because the other person's not getting fed enough. Mm-hmm. So but again, you have to watch your energy and make sure that when you are paying attention to what some of these other people are doing, who are maybe on a different part of the path, there's nothing wrong with any of this. It's just that they're on a different part of the path, and so you don't see eye to eye, and it can cause a lot of stumbling. But what our main thing is to always remain consciously self-aware, and instead of reacting negatively to them, send as much positive energy mm-hmm. their way to help them become more coherent to feeling better. I don't even want to say to seeing things your way, because no. I don't think I'm as any more right than, you know, anybody else, but to becoming more harmoniously coherent. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get a lot of pushback from people. They're like, well, if you just do that all day long, they're just going to take over and, you know, the world's going to be crap and all that. And I'm like, no, that's not what I've been told. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I've seen in my travels through the quantum field. This is kind of how we do it, but I've been raised to think otherwise. So it's really hard to shift that. That shift is very, it has to be self-initiated.
Well, and I think about, you know, an internal combustion engine, for example. Mm-hmm. When one cylinder is up, you know, to yeah. make the compression, to create yeah. the combustion, another cylinder is down, right? And so, and I think that that's, you know, a very simplistic way of thinking about it. Whereas, you know, whereas some of us may be, you know, at some point, you know, a higher point in our, like I said, ascension type work or our journey, our path. Mm-hmm. Others may be just starting out, or they may have gone down a completely other path and then decided to change gears or get onto a different path. So bottom line is we're all in various states or stages of our own journeys. And so yes. you're right. I mean, just like with things like the UFO phenomena or paranormal phenomena. Mm-hmm. People who have never had their own experiences, no matter how much evidence you show them, will never truly accept yeah. that it's a possibility until they have their own experience. The same is true for our journeys. Yeah. People who are different stages of their journeys cannot see things the same way others see them because you're not at the same level.
No, direct experience is always the best teacher. We've said it so many times before. And direct experience has a different outcome for each person because mm-hmm. we are all coming at it from a different lens.
Right.
And those lenses are colored by our other experiences and our learnings and indoctrinations and everything. So it's fascinating. I mean, we know that the great avatars that we know of anyway, and the ones that you and I connect with all the time in our practices, are always saying work towards unity consciousness, work towards mm-hmm. harmony, and you do eventually. That's our true natural right. self, but we're here to experience a lot of other stuff, and so you can't discount what someone else is saying, doing, or experiencing just because it's not what you think is the right thing to right. do. So there's a lot of conundrum attached to that, and everybody's really experiencing it right now. And I have to step back for a second and kind of rejoice, because this is what so many beings, including like the star teachers, have always said. You will come to a point where everything comes to a head, and it's mm-hmm. it feels like so much pressure that everything's going to explode. That's usually, and that is when we all kind of come into coherence. So I have to rejoice when I see all the crazy stuff happening. I hate all the suffering. I'm just going to be honest with you. It hurts my heart. It hurts my mind. I think it's sad and kind of pointless, and I question mm-hmm. it a lot of the time. I'm like, why am I buying into this whole paradigm? But I do know that this is how we've done it for time immemorial, I guess. In this particular framework. So
it's very cyclical, right? And yes. the scenery changes and the characters change, but the topics for the most part do not.
Right. It's just like a school, right? So every year there's a new class that comes in. The teacher might be teaching the same things with a little added mm-hmm. knowledge from the years before, and the school hasn't changed that much, but the people coming in are just getting exposed mm-hmm. to these things. So that's kind of, I think, where we are. And I think the main message is to not be afraid and to try to stay out of getting pulled for any too great a length of time into the lower vibrational states of emotion, like anger, fear, resentment.
Yeah. And I'll say that if you, you know, for anybody who's listening, if you're not aware of the idea of shielding yourself or grounding yourself, you know, these are very powerful tools that you can use to guard your own energy. And so, and when I say guard, I don't mean like as if it's going to be taken, but I mean just to make sure that you know you're aware of your own energy and you're keeping your own energy in balance.
Reserve your energy.
And so, you know, there are lots of places you can look online to find how to do those things, or you could message either Debs or I, and we can help you navigate, you know, how the right method for grounding and shielding for you, because it's different for everyone. Yeah. But also, before we go too much further, I want to take a step back. And one thing I want to give a shout out to a really good friend of mine and a guru, for me, his name is Santosh David. And in my very early days of after I kind of had my awakening moment and I was drinking from a fire hose, but I'll tell you what, the fire hose was having a hard time keeping up. Santosh and my other really good friend, Stefan, were both there for me to help me. They had been doing it a little while longer than me. And, you know, Santosh in the very early days was very much learn how to identify your energy and control your own energy. And if I didn't have him constantly working with me over the years to do that, you know, the experience that I had last week, I don't know if it would have gone the same way. So I thank him from the bottom of my heart. He is a great friend, and I don't, you know, I think I would be in a different place 3 years from then if I didn't have him along my side.
That's so cool. I love that you had a teacher like that, or have a teacher like that. I have studied with so many people over my life, but I do have, you know, in my yogic practice, I do have a guru, not the kind of guru everybody's like, oh, we bow down and, you know, he's infallible and all that. No, it's just a regular guy, lives in Chicago, but he does come through a very strong lineage. But what I loved about him, and his American name is David. He goes by Dasa, his sacred name. But what he taught me decades and decades and decades ago was, it's very simple. You just watch your breath, allow yourself to visualize your energy come up through your astral spine, out the top of your head, roll it back down the back, and you start to spin your chakras, your energy centers, in a coherent state, watching your breath a little bit, and eventually they expand into this bubble, you know, what some people might call the biofield or the energy field or the aura, but it comes into a bubble, and then you can fill that bubble with as much love. You start thinking about all the things that have made you feel like you were loved or loving, and things that make you feel good and joyful. And you just fill it up with all these good memories, like you're in the theater of the soul for a few seconds. You fill it up and then you lock it in there. But what's so good is, because that energy is so high, any energy that is not coherent with it, that's lower, hits that. It's like a membrane, right? I'm sure you've experienced that. It literally, you can see people psychically attacking you sometimes, right? Or verbally or whatever. And it hits it and you're protected. You know, you can still see the world, but it doesn't affect you, in other words. It doesn't have to be a person. It could be a situation. But the other cool thing about this visualization that I love is that energy, it's also transmitting from that bubble. So anytime something that comes up against the bubble is not coherent with that energy, it gets affected and it bounces back like it's rubbery. It bounces back to the sender or wherever its originator, and it changes it, maybe ever so slightly or greatly. So it's also it's another way, and I love that process, because it's a way of volitionally making positive change while watching yourself, your own energy, while protecting yourself. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, I do have that process. I could send people if they want. It's really easy and fun.
And mine, that Santosh taught me, is very similar. I picture a light at my core. And with every in-breath, the light gets bigger and bigger until it surrounds me and, you know, encompasses me. Now, I will say that because I have ADHD, and so I constantly, my mind is all over the place, and it's really hard sometimes to focus on the grounding and shielding, you know, work. And so for myself, I have built a little macro, if you will, and I simply say flame on, like Johnny Storm from Fantastic Four. Yeah. And the bubble is then immediately around me, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
So.
And that's that's the end part of this other thing, is you have a programming tool, which is what yogis call a mudra. You just put the tip of your tongue to the roof of your mouth when you feel that really great feeling, you know, in your first visualization. You only have to do this once if you want to. And then as you do that, touch tip the tongue, roof of the mouth. It's called the Bhaga Mudra. You just say, I program myself every time I do this activity with my tongue, that feeling state is going to come back, and it's going to become more powerful each time I do it. And so I don't even have to have a word, but sometimes I do have a word, a secret word I made up. But just doing the mudra, and nobody has to see you even do it.
Right.
But it's like your flame on, and it's literally, you can feel it. It becomes more apparent to you. So
it's also interesting information for me. So on this side of my face, back in 2018, just ironically, or maybe not, just before I had my awakening moment, I had shingles on my face, and they left, you know, kind of some permanent nerve damage over here. And so, but it has become my spidey sense. And so when that area tingles, I know that I'm, you know, I'm either near something that's trying to communicate, or, you know, something is trying to get my attention. So it immediately brings my awareness to the now. No matter what I'm doing, when the area starts to tingle, it brings my awareness to the now. And I really focus on not just like, who am I with and what are they saying, but what's happening around me. It opens up and expands my awareness to everything happening. So for me, I thought, well, this is very interesting that this happened right before I had an awakening, but maybe it happened on purpose so that I would have this physical sensation to bring my awareness in these moments as I expand myself.
Right. I mean, there are no accidents, right? It reminds me of, you know, Whitley Strieber talking about his implant. You know, he had an implant early on in his ear, and it was very painful, and it was super annoying, and he couldn't stand it anymore, and he went to a doctor and with his wife Annie, and the doctor tried to get it out, and it moved, and he couldn't get it, and he was going to rip his ear up trying to get it out. And Annie said, leave it in there. It's in there for a purpose. I know it. And he was kind of grouchy about it. I think he went two or three doctors to try to get it, and it happened every time, and it was messing up his ear. So he just decided, oh, well, I've got to deal with it. This was before he made his peace with the visitors, as he calls them, and made friends with them. But he was in a lot of fear about it and hated it. And after she passed away, he found out it is kind of their secret communication device, that she speaks to him through that. And he hears her, but he also sees a marquee of her words in front of his visual, like through his visual cortex. And they've written books together since her death and all kinds of things. And he would never part with it now. But, so it's just, you know, we have to be really open to the things that are happening. Nothing happens by accident. They all have reason. So I always thought that was a fascinating story.
Yeah, it is. It really makes me think about the people who had abduction experiences, or we'll call them visitation experiences, who in the moment were fearful because, you know, it forces shocking. a lot of people to think about how they consider, you know, the control over their lives and their bodies. Yes. But I think I've talked to a lot of people who have had experiences like that, who ultimately feel that it was a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Over time. And isn't that true about almost everything?
Mm-hmm.
Over time, if we pull on, like when we find ourselves in a really happy moment in our lives, if you pull on the thread of that tapestry, if you will, mm-hmm. and start to follow back, how did I get here? Usually the original or the origin point that we can identify is some, like something that wasn't quite so wonderful.
Right.
And that we really, you know, didn't want to happen, or we didn't, you know, we were resistant to, or we thought we were under attack about, and yet that is the thing that set all this other stuff
right.
in motion.
Yeah.
So we do have to kind of take, I don't even want to say a global view of things, but a universal or cosmic view of things when we do take time to go within, however you do that, and just say, I want to be open to everything and see it as purely, as clearly as I can, mm-hmm. how it all fits together. Well, our little onboard operating system can't hold that much information, but every once in a while you'll get like another puzzle piece that fits mm-hmm. and you'll be like, oh, that's why that happened. Oh my God, it makes so much sense. So we have to just be open to the fact that creation is benevolent. It is, but I don't want to say, you know, in a Pollyannish sort of way. It's all for us because it is us.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes like a small child doesn't understand why the mother yells at it when it's reaching for the flame on the stove.
Right.
That's a traumatic thing to have mother yell at you.
Oh, yeah.
But she saved you from burning your fingers. So, you know.
Yep.
Anyway, getting off track, but I think it's important to note that the practices that raise your vibrational state, or the mindset that raises your vibrational state consistently, will always come back to you having another piece of that cosmic view, mm-hmm. whereas things that are, maybe you do spiritual practices or some sort of discipline, you know, whatever, maybe you decided you've got to work out and get in shape. You know, you can either do that because you love your body and you love feeling human and you love movement and you want to do better and get stronger. Or maybe you're that person who goes into the gym because you're scared to death that you're going to, you know, fall apart, or you're not going to look good for your spouse or whatever, and nobody's going to like you anymore. If you come at it from the fear-based part, you're not going to have a good experience of it. And number one, you're probably not going to stick with it. Number mm-hmm. two, it's probably not going to have the same outcome as you would have if you did it from a state of joy or even curiosity.
Right.
Like, I just want to see what, I'm a science experiment. I want to see what this does, right? And so coming at, you know, when we tell our friends and our clients, here are some spiritual practices you might want to do, or here's some processes, some tools and techniques you want to try. We don't have to put the word spiritual in there to help you raise your vibrational state and become more coherent and have a better experience of life. If they're doing it because they're scared, because their life feels pretty cruddy right now, they're just going to put more cruddy into
yep.
it, right?
Yeah,
so
I mean,
maybe we should talk about that a little bit, you know,
you know, it's the, like, you know, it's kind of a cliche and old adage, but, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right? And so it's very much, you know, again, going back to Dr. Dispenza, it's mm-hmm. where you put your attention is where you put your intention. And so you're right. I mean, if you go into a situation with fear, depression, sadness, anxiety, those things being your motivator, mm-hmm. Then you're not likely to A, stick with it, and B, whatever change that you're able to make will likely revert because it was not built on a solid foundation of the other side of it, which is, you know, ultimately love, but, you know, joy, happiness, all of those things kind of stem off of the concept of love.
Right. Curiosity, wonder. I use the word wonder a lot because I look at little children and they, you know, pre-indoctrination of the environment and right. so forth, they aren't afraid of anything. They're pretty mm-hmm. fearless, and they engage with life with this sense of wonder and delight. Mm-hmm. Everything is new. And that's what I try to instill in myself when I'm doing something especially new, even if it's something that's kind of, you know, way out of my wheelhouse or mm-hmm. different or whatever. What can I find that gives me a sense of adventure or curiosity or wonder? And that lifts my vibrational state. And so then I'm able to kind of keep with it till I get some other outcome. But the other part of this is that people are so used to giving up their power to, you know, mother, father, caregiver, then teacher, mm-hmm. then, you know, minister, priest, politicians, you know, the banks, everything. They're so used to being programmed by advertising, for instance, and media, mm-hmm. that you're not good enough, so you need to buy this, or you need to do this, and it's all, you know, just kind of the carrot and stick in front of the right. donkey. That it can feel very just pointless, right? After a while, people get they get immune to it after a while, where they just don't want to try. And that's where the depression and the sadness and the low energy and lack of mm-hmm. focus come in. So I think what is important is to maybe first identify how are you feeling
right.
about something. And then, you know, we live in the age of information. Look up, you know, practices to ease or alleviate this feeling state, like anxiety, for instance.
Yep.
You know,
go ahead.
Well, neuroscience teaches us that we have this thing in our systems called, in our brain, called the default mode network, right? And the default mode network is where you go, you default to
right.
when the going gets tough, right? It's habituation. But you can short circuit that and rewire. And this is why I love Dr. Dispenza so much, because he talks a lot about mm-hmm. the rewiring of your neurological systems, your brain and your body. Well, you can find simple ways to do that with breath, with going out in the sunlight, with singing a song. This morning, I found a new one. Some studies that show clapping your hands vigorously raise your dopamine and serotonin mm. levels exponentially. And that's why people in crowds, when something good happens, they clap.
They clap.
Right? Or when you're trying to get your energy up, like athletes before a game, they all get together and clap, 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 right. clap, right? They're raising their energy. So simple things like that. It doesn't have to be something elaborate or daunting at first. Just look up something that helps for the very thing that you have maybe identified that kind of is the state that you don't want to be in. Anxiety, mm-hmm. fear, I don't know, laziness, whatever. There's always something.
And what I was going to say is, and when you're going through those practices, I think there are some people who work better in a learn at their own pace mentality. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who need a system or a structure
exactly.
to at least help them get started. And then maybe within that structure, there's a learn at your own pace aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I think that regardless of what your modality is for learning and growing, there's a very key element within there that really determines your success, but your outcome of the work that you're doing. And that is love versus hate. If your modality within its teachings includes a directive to hate any individual or group of people,
or even an ideology,
yeah, it's built on a flawed concept.
I agree.
That hate is a path forward.
Yeah.
Hate will always keep you where you are or progress you backwards.
You should stand up and let people see your shirt.
Oh,
because I love it so much.
It's probably backwards, but
it's good.
Made any nation any great.
Great. Yeah.
And it's not a liberal thing. It's not a conservative thing. It's not an independent thing. It's a universal law. Love. I mean, the words that just popped into my head is that song, you know, love will keep us together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
yeah,
that's what it is. And so if anything is fostering hate, if anyone is telling you that you have to hate this group of people, inflection, looking inside, finding out what that really means to you. And if hate ultimately does not resonate with you, which it likely will not, then that's your sign to reevaluate.
Yeah. There are a bazillion other teachings out there. You do not have to stay with one just because you invested time in it. And I want to say this too. No time is wasted in learning, even in learning that what you were learning is the wrong thing for you. Right. It's like dating, you know, you don't marry every single person you date because that would be silly. But it's not just paying attention to, is this based on hate or fear? It's also, you know, do the teachings of this practice or this ideology bring in the forces of over-categorization, I can't say the word, categorization, separation of anything, labeling, you know, anything that indicates us versus them. You know, they don't believe like us, so we're going to heaven. Or they don't look like us, so they're inferior from us, or we're afraid of them. You know, those are big concepts, but, you know, I hate to say it, but even the political systems of our world are based on us versus them. Competition is based on us versus them. So where do you draw the line? Well, I think you draw the line at what you are willing to explore comfortably and what you're not. You know, I'm not saying don't go out and play sports because that's causing divisiveness, because what's cool about good sports anyway, you know, if you have a good coach and good teams and good participants, after the game is over, y'all clap, give high fives, give hugs, and go out for beer, right? So that's a different thing. It's about dancing with each other. But all of these other things that cause so much divisiveness, they're to be suspect. Consider suspect.
Yep. And, you know, I'm always in this moment, I'm always reminded of Thomas Edison, right? His famous quote of, you know, he didn't fail. He just found 10,000 ways that didn't work, right?
Right. Till he found the right one.
Exactly. So it's, there's nothing wrong with, you know, I was born into Christianity, and specifically in the Southern Baptist denomination, I think it's what it's called. But in 97, when I graduated from high school and I moved out of my parents' house, that kind of began my journey to find what modality or methodology worked best for me. It's funny, you know, you hear about Freudian slips, right? Where you are saying, you know, you say the wrong thing, but it's, you know, maybe that's really what
it's exactly what you,
I was talking with someone the other day and the number 1997 came up. And I was like, oh, it was a great year. It was the year I was born. And it was, I meant to say it was the year I graduated high school, but a Freudian slip maybe that was the year that I was truly born into, you know, this spiritual life that
you woke up.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it's, I know that we have spent a lot of time talking, you know, in the beginning about my experience. Did you have any experiences that you wanted to share that maybe have happened since the last time we recorded the podcast, or since this is kind of a new, we're not going to call it a segment because I think it's going to end up taking up the whole episode, but kind of a new thing for us.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you, that have happened to you that you want to share?
Oh gosh. So many things have happened since we last talked, and it's only been 2 weeks, but, I will say that I've been having some really incredible experiences with, I don't even want to call them orbs, but they're semi-spherical beings of light, that show up, like, who knows, they may show up in this video after we're done. Sometimes I don't see them, but you know, when I'm working with clients, they show up after when I'm, or I'm doing a podcast. And, but often when I am in my meditation practice, I will be in this deep place, and then suddenly there's this bright thing that is not, it's not in my internal vision, but it's like somebody's outside my, they're in my room shining a flashlight right at my eyes. And just, you know, full disclosure to people, I live in a city, so there's always light somewhere, even when I'm at 4:30 in the morning doing this. So I wear a blindfold, I wear an eye mask, so nothing can get in. And then there's this torch in front of me. And a couple of times it's happened, and I've thought, okay, this is another, because usually when something unusual happens, it's another way that I've gone deeper. And so I just hang with it. But the feeling state was already really deep. It was really good, but nothing else was happening other than that. And I felt compelled to look. So I literally lifted up my, my mindfold, and there is this huge, but it's not, a, it's not just a sphere. It's like constant rays of light coming out of it just in front of me, like, you know, this big. And there's heat, there's heat, it's, but it's not hot, it's just this warmth. Like, I think about getting into a bathtub full of warm honey or something. That's what it feels like. And there's all this love. And when I ask, who are you, or what is this, all I just get is more love. Like, that's the response. It is, so every time I ask a question, it just, I get flooded with more love until it's just, like you were saying earlier on, it's just encompassing me. And I'll just sit with it for a while, and eventually it will kind of ease off. By then I've put my thing back down. It'll ease off. And then what I notice is my whole internal environment has shifted, not just because I'm in meditation, but like for my whole day, I will get a download of exactly how the day's going to go and what I need to do to make it more beneficial and harmonious, and how things are going to fall in place. And like, I may get a whole, you know, chapter of a book in one like second. It's just crazy. And I don't know what it is yet. Another version of me that's coming in to give me a boost. I don't know. But it's been very unique. It's not like a lot of the other beings that I've encountered. And it, it has no identification. And so I wonder if that doesn't have something to do with what we're talking about. It's like, I know the teachers often say, because I ask them, you know, what is, how do we address you? And they said, we don't have a label. We've evolved past that egoic state. We don't use names or labels, but for you, you can call us this. I think that's what this being is, some kind of a great generator of teachings. Or energy or something, but it has no identifier. It just is. In fact, I'm hearing it in my head. It's isness. It's so weird. But that's kind of the hallmark thing that's happened to me in the last couple of weeks.
And that's amazing. And the vibe that I kind of feel or sense is that it's merging with you, and that's how it passes on what it knows, is by merging with other energies. And so it's merging with your energy so that it could pass on these great teachings that that you're meant to know, that will further you in a way that maybe you've not considered before.
Yeah, I mean, it feels right. In yoga, we call that drishti. You know, it's when the guru, you know, the initiate finally says, I want to know what you know. You know, you do all these processes, spiritual processes, and you're sitting in front of each other. And then the guru taps you right here in the middle of the forehead on the Ajna chakra. And you get a download of everything that they have learned from their guru, whose guru had passed on to them, whose guru passed on to them, and so forth. That's the idea. That's the idea of that. But that's what that feels like. Yeah. It feels like that. I think you're on the right track, but beautiful.
And I think a lot of times, and this has been true for me, you get kind of a download of information, but it's like reading Greek, and you've never spoken Greek before in your life. And so in order to decipher it, you have to continue to grow in your journey to be able to understand what it's trying to tell you.
You have to keep playing the video game before you get the unencrypted Easter eggs. Right? I'm using a poor example, but you might find Easter eggs, but you don't know what they're about. You don't know what they're for, right? So,
but that's amazing. I mean, cool. I got goosebumps.
No, I've got it just talking about it, because it just, I'm sure you can see my eyes do a certain thing when I talk about it, because it's like I'm linking with it, you know. And what's funny is it feels like now that I'm speaking it out in words, it feels like the conglomerate of souls. Mm-hmm. It's really quite fascinating, the things that come in.
It's almost like Pac-Man, and you got your power pellet, and now you can go out and tackle your world.
I can handle the day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at least the first few steps, once I step off of my meditation cushion.
Right. You know, there's times when sometimes I wish I could just spend all day in a meditation. You know, you go these amazing places and you have these amazing experiences while you're just kind of sitting on a cushion. And then the kind of, you know, for me at least, there's a timer that goes off that reminds me that I have other things that I have to do in the mundane world. And I'm like, oh, do I have to leave? It's like 5 more minutes, mom, you know, just the,
I know.
It's quite amazing. And it's something I'm going to work really hard for myself for this year, is actually a goal to be able to have at least maybe a day or, you know, an evening where I can get away in a cabin in the woods,
retreat,
and just unplug and meditate and just enjoy nature and the whole kit and caboodle. So
I think it's really important. You and I kind of talked a little bit about it this week, about taking a tech break, even, you know, even if you take it for a few hours. This last couple of weeks, I took all social media off of my phone. I was weaning myself away from looking at it on the phone itself. I spend so much time on my computer that it's not fun to go look at social media and hang out there for a couple hours, right, after that. So it's kind of a habit stacking kind of thing. But more than that, several times a year, I turn everything off. I do, you know, we haven't had a vacation in like 8 or 9 years, but I can still, you know, stop everything and just take even a few hours or a day to kind of go in and be by myself and just be in nature, which I think it's important for me to be in nature for that. And just be with yourself. Like, really, it's tough at first. So you might want to do it for like an hour once a month, you know, turn everything off and don't have any other outside stimulation. Just be with yourself and see what you see. Right. And then work it up to a half a day, and then maybe a day, and then maybe a few days. But
that's, behind me here in my office, I've got a decent size kind of walk-in closet in this room, and I'm in the process of taking just about everything out of it so that I can basically turn it into a deprivation room. So I can go in, I've got a zero gravity chair, I can sit in a zero gravity chair, turn off the lights, put a blindfold on, put, you know, headphones on to block out any sound, and just be,
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. This office has been conditioned over many years to have no interruptions, no, except for sometimes the dog will burst through the door, but it doesn't affect me. But I do the same thing. I will wear noise canceling headphones. That is not something that they teach in Kriya Yoga. But, you know, noise canceling headphones, my blindfold, in the dark. In fact, my guru has always meditated and done his practice in a closet. He says so he won't freak his wife out with his chanting. But, you know.
Well, there's always that, at least in the beginning, there's that feeling of, you know, is if you're, you know, in a relationship, is this person going to be weirded out by the things that you might say or do or the sounds you might make? Exactly. And so for me, there's always, at least there's a self-conscious aspect. And so by removing myself from a situation where, you know, I don't have to worry about that, it doesn't, it therefore, you know, is no longer a blocker for me having the best experience.
I think it's a wonderful idea, and I highly recommend it to anyone who can. I don't have a walk-in closet because I live in a 100-year-old house, but this studio has its own dedicated meditation space, and that's what I do. And over the many decades that Dave and I have been together, he's learned if I'm breathing funny or differently, and he hears that I'm okay. You know, if I'm making funny sounds, I'm okay. You know, I think it's important that you have your own space if you can to explore these things.
But also on that same thread, something that I tell my clients all the time is don't put conditions on your happiness.
No.
Right. So if, you know, in my situation, I know I need to meditate. And if I don't have the space to do, let's say we're on vacation and I'm in a hotel room, you know, and I don't have my closet to sit in, there's still opportunities to find ways to meditate. You know, I don't put conditions on, well, if I had my headphones or if I had my chair, or if I had my closet, because then it'll never
happen. That's limiting. Yeah, that's limiting. And, you know, let's just be honest. Meditation is a state of being. It's not a state of doing. Right. So we can create some really good conditions to help it be more beneficial or easier to get into that state. But, you know, I go into meditation between each set at the gym, in a noisy gym.
Yeah. I oftentimes go into meditation while driving. I don't close my eyes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My left brain is engaged in doing the driving thing. And so my right brain is now free to explore.
Yeah, I do too. I used to do healing work while I was driving. And, you know, I'm interacting with the person up here kind of on my visor, but my body is still working. And you'll see me do that in like broadcasts when I'm doing the Star Teachers. I am not present as a human being. My mind is not present. I usually just go elsewhere. But my body will work with, you know, all the, you know, things that have to be done. Because I'm the only one here doing it, and, you know, with the technology, if it needs to be done.
Yep.
But I don't remember it, so.
So I think we're nearing the end of this particular episode. So I would say, you know, for anybody who watched, listened, or made it this far, the kind of resounding message I think that Debs and I are trying to say is that as you go forth in your practice and in your journey, to always try to stay grounded in the concept of love.
Yes. Yes. Because love always wins. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes its time, but it's always a finer energy.
And, you know, I'm often, I think it's a really good visual example. If you've ever seen the movie Inside Out, it's a cartoon movie by Pixar. But at one point they're looking at this memory, and it was a happy memory. and you know, Joy, the character Joy, pulls like a timeline and realizes that the happy memory before it was a sad memory. And so there's always our memories, our experiences are always very complex. Every single one of them have intense complexities. And so although today you may see this thing that's happening to you as a bad thing, take time to evaluate how it also could be a good thing. You know, I got laid off 2 years ago. Oh my goodness, it was right before Christmas. I was freaking out. But I took the opportunity to reevaluate and say, well, maybe now is a better time to then look at a better company to work for that gives me more freedom or whatever the case may be. So I think, you know, it's kind of the old adage, you know, there's a silver lining, but always take the opportunity to look at things from a different view or a different perspective.
Yeah.
And see which one resonates with you the most.
Yes. No, I agree with you. And it's so funny because I was going to tell a story about losing a job and how it was devastating. I'd been in it for like 7 years and I loved it. And suddenly the company sold. And I had to scramble to find something else. And I wasn't sure I would like it. And it was very traumatic for my family and for me and all this. Ultimately, it led me to meeting my husband.
Wow.
Who is like the greatest thing in, you know, my world. He's my best friend. And I would have never met him probably had I stayed at that other job because it was in a whole different town and everything. So weird, you know? So we have to be really objective and we just have to be the observers in during our experiences instead of getting so emotionally, you know, charged by them. And that's a whole practice itself.
It is. To be both the experiencer and the observer is very hard. And so, but I do want to wrap off this episode. As a reminder, if you'd like to work with me, I do have an LLC where I help mentor people. I've got clients that I've helped them set up a small business. I've got clients where I've helped them with their spiritual journey. I've got, you know, 20 something years of business acumen, and about 10 years, let's say, of spirituality acumen. So if you'd like to work with me, you can go to mymysticmentor.com, fill out a questionnaire, it'll email me, and then we can go from there. If you'd like to work with Debs, Debs is amazing. She is, one of my mentors, if I can call her that. And you can go to Debs Shakti, that's SHAKTI.com, DebsShakti.com, and you can sign up to work with her. And she does some amazing stuff. If you want to find out, you know, past life stuff or just figure out why you're afraid of flying, for example,
that was
she can help you with that.
That was a really cool experience I had with you, Josh. Well, thank you. Well, till next time, everybody.
Yeah.
I'm really
Really appreciate it. And
life.
You know, be sure to click subscribe. And if you think anybody you know could benefit from this episode, please send it to them. Even if they listen to 5 minutes, maybe something that we say will resonate with them and they'll reevaluate their way of existence. So thank you again so much.
Awesome.
And until next time.
Bye.